let's head to the phone lines right now to be joined by Matt Verderam of Sports Illustrated. Let's get his thoughts on Chiefs and Bills and the AFC playoff picture. Matt, how you doing today, my man?
Doing well. How are you, Carrington?
Doing good, man. I understand fans' frustration about losing a game. It's certainly been a while since the Chiefs have lost a game. But when you really step back and you look at the total picture of things, nothing has really changed. The Chiefs still have the inside track to being the one seed. They are still going to win this division. And the AFC playoff picture is going to still have to go through Arrowhead.
Yes. Yes. I think, you know, look, that block kick against Denver, we all may look back at the end of the year and go, that had a lot of impact in a lot of ways. Because if they lose that game, this is a different conversation. But they didn't lose the game. And so, look, I agree. I mean, if you're the Chiefs, did you want to beat the Bills? Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, I don't buy into this narrative for 2 seconds to see in some corners of Twitter where it's like, well, did the Chiefs really, you know, did they show their stuff? The Chiefs showed a lot of plays in that game they hadn't shown all year long. So I think they wanted to win. I think they played hard, but they didn't execute. They made mistakes. Buffalo deserved to win. They outplayed them. That all being said, do I think the Chiefs were that broken up about it on the plane ride home? No, not really. They've lost to the Bills now 4 years in a row in the regular season, and it hasn't stopped them from doing anything. So, look, the bottom line is the Chiefs have 7 games left. If they beat Carolina on Sundays, we all expect they'll be up by a full game, 6 games on the schedule. And they've just got to play Buffalo even. They don't have to beat them out. They just have to play them even, and they're the number one seed.
The only thing that I question really from the game, I guess there's 2 things. Let's start with the first thing. It's something you alluded to about the Chiefs potentially holding back. The snap counts are a little bit off. DeAndre Hopkins played in less than 50% of the snaps. Joshua Uche, that you brought in for pass rush for a team that was struggling to get to Josh Allen, he plays on 5 snaps out of the 73 that you had on defense. Just how they use their new additions was a little bit puzzling to me.
That's fair. And I think Uche one especially so. Hopkins, I think part of that was when they were running the ball, they could take him out of the game. And so I think that was a little bit of it. The Uche thing is mystifying. I said that in real time to somebody that was watching, that was talking to me while I was watching the game. Like, you brought him in for 3rd and 8. You brought him in for 3rd and 9. Like, that is the sole reason he's on the team. And if you're not going to play him in those spots, then you might as well just cut him. Because there's no reason to have him. You're not playing him against the run, anything like that. So I agree. Look, the other thing, if you want to be that guy and sit there and say, well, you know, were they holding back? One thing I thought was very bizarre in this game, they very rarely, if ever, spied Allen. Ever. Including on 4th and 2. They just played it pretty straight up and just allowed him to run when he wanted to. And of course, he didn't run that much early in the game. He ran a lot more late. I thought that was bizarre. But in the end, listen, they lost the game because they missed another deep shot to Worthy. And that to me was the play of the game. I think if they had hit that for a touchdown, they'd be able to win. That play changed a lot about that game. They never went back to Worthy after that. It was a huge first quarter. Their offense, they have to find more explosion. And they have it on this team. This is not a year ago where they had nobody. This team, they've got guys. And right now, the quarterback is a bigger part of the problem, I think, than a lot of people want to talk about.
Let's talk about the quarterback there, because this is the debate that we were having on the show. If you were saying that Pat could have threw a better ball on that pass to Xavier Worthy, I don't disagree. That's a difficult throw, a more difficult throw than I think people are giving you credit for. Yeah, if you throw a perfect ball, Xavier Worthy can score there. But there's also no reason for that pass play to be an incompletion either. That is a play that, as a pro, you got to have better field sense, you got to have more awareness around the sideline, and you got to drag those feet, and you got to turn that into a completion, a big play down the field that kind of flips the field and flips momentum. And we've seen that now happen a couple of times with Xavier Worthy. It happened against Tampa Bay. It happened on Sunday against Buffalo. He has to have better field awareness.
Totally agree with you. Totally agree with you. He has had a couple times now where he's had a ball that he should have caught in bounds, and he didn't. I was at that Tampa game. I was almost right in front of him when he caught the football. I don't disagree. Worthy has to make those plays. He's a first-round pick. He's an NFL receiver. There's no excuse not to get your feet down on those plays. I will say this, though. I am a little bit more critical of Mahomes, maybe, than you are on that play. That ball's got to be field side and with some air under it. The safeties weren't even near him. Like, that's a walk-in touchdown if Mahomes puts that ball where he's supposed to put it. And the same thing was true a week ago against Denver, where he had Worthy with a step on a guy, a little bit of a tighter window, but a clear step, step and a half, throws the ball out of bounds. Worthy has no shot to make a play. Before that, the play against Tampa, as you mentioned, Worthy's got to get in bounds, but again, it's to the outside of him. And these are, look, it's, some of that's a little nitpicky, but you're Patrick Mahomes. Like, you're not Kirk Cousins. You're Patrick Mahomes. You are the highest paid player in football, and deservedly so. You're phenomenal. You, in my lifetime, the greatest player I've ever seen. Those footballs have to be where they need to be. Now, Worthy's got to make an adjustment. I'm not arguing that point, but there have been too many times this year where Mahomes has not played to his standard. I point to the first drive of the game. That interception where he threw that ball to Noah Gray, that is just an inexcusable mistake. I don't care that he got hit. I don't care what. It's second and three. It's a second play from scrimmage. Take the sack, throw it into the ground. What, you can't sail the ball 15 yards over a guy as you're spinning around toward the ground. Like that kind of stuff against a good team, it's going to make you lose.
How much of Patrick's struggles do you think are attributed to the left tackle position?
I think some. Look, earlier in the year, he had some happy feet in the pocket, a little jittery. I think he's been better with that as the year has gone on, to his credit. The left tackle, when Sua Matei has been in there, it's been unplayable. He simply could not play. That's why he was inactive yesterday, or on Sunday, rather. I think Wanya Morris has been, I don't know if adequate's the right word, middling, not a disaster, but certainly not a pillar of strength over there either. That being said, and this is where I move off of Pat and go to the coaching staff, then you need to stop using Carson Steele and pass pro, put Samaje Perine in there, and play offense the way you should play offense. Because Carson Steele now, multiple games here back-to-back, has just massively blown pass block assignments. He doesn't know where to go. He's not blocking the right guy. And so to me, then put Perine in there, or Hunt, by the way, who can also do it. And I'm not saying you've got to like flat-out double-team the guy off of the blind side. Chip him. Do something. The Chiefs don't like to chip. They've never liked to chip with Andy Reid. Get over it. You need to chip. And if that makes Mahomes more comfortable in the pocket, fine. It's not as though they're losing a whole lot in the passing game because they're chipping with Hunter Perine. You know, it's one thing if you're chipping with Kelsey. Okay, fine. Yeah, that's a detriment. These running backs, chip with them. Who cares? If that's going to give you an extra half second to throw the football and gives them some peace of mind, do it. But they're not bad offensively this year like they were a year ago, but they are boring and they're pedestrian. There are 34 quarterbacks this year, as of right now, who qualify for average depth of target. Mahomes is dead last, and it's not close, by the way. He is far and away dead last. That has to change.
Right now, we're talking to Matt Verderam of Sports Illustrated here, going through some of the top storylines in the NFL. I want to talk to you about the defense. I put a lot of what happened on Sunday with the defense, that the defense has kind of been walking a weird line these last couple of weeks. Baker Mayfield went down the field to score at the end of regulation. That's not a drive that the Chiefs gave up really at any point last season. Bo Nix put his team in field goal range, and they needed a miraculous block punt to win against the Denver Broncos. And for all the things we are talking about with the game, this was a 2-point game, and you needed your defense to simply keep them out of the end zone. You could have lived with Buffalo kicking a field goal. They could not score a touchdown, and the Chiefs defense couldn't get off the field. So we can have our criticism about Mahomes, and I think that they're fair. They went to one of their units to try to help them win the game, and their defense just didn't really answer the call on Sunday.
Yes, no, there's no question, Carrington. You're right. I think it's, and look, it's got to be shared blame in that game, and you're also right about the fact that this has been brewing for a few weeks. Now, the Denver game, to their defense a little bit, I thought that they, in the second half, were great defensively, and you know, they kicked the ball out of bounds and put them at the 40. But yes, still, you got to go off to make a play. Well, you know, on Sunday, look, there's two things right now. There's a lot of stuff that I think people are taking out of this game nationally that I wouldn't even bother with. They'll fix it. They'll correct it. They don't care. They'll scheme it up come January. There are two things defensively they've got to fix. One is this pass rush. They just can't get home before guys. Can't do it. Their pressure rate has plummeted over the last month. Chris Jones is the only guy who gets consistent pressure, and he's only got 3 sacks this year. And I don't think it's an indictment, by the way. I think he's been fantastic. It just doesn't matter because nobody else can do anything. Mike Dana got a $24 million contract. He's been MIA all season. George Karlaftis has been good in some games, MIA and others. Now, the good news for the Chiefs is, of course, they're getting Charles Domenico, who back maybe this week, if not probably the week after, and he's a very good player. Like, that could really kind of solve things, especially if Uche gets more involved. There's reason to believe that's going to change. The other thing, which I don't think is going to change, is the second cornerback position. Like, Trent McDuffie's maybe the best corner in football. Him, Surtain, whoever you want to say, throw him in there, fine. He's right in the mix. You can't play Najee Johnson if Najee Johnson's going to play like that. I mean, if you go back and watch that game, every time the Bills needed a conversion, they just found 13 and just throw it at him. Every time. And there was nothing the Chiefs could do about it. I think Shamari Connor, I thought he had a poor game on Sunday. I think normally he's fine. He's an asset. I think the Chiefs, look, whether it's Joshua Williams, whether it is Christian Roland Wallace, whether it is going out and getting Xavion Howard, like whatever it is, you got to do something. They don't have to be great. They don't have to be great, but you've got to put somebody over there who is not just getting absolutely torched play in and play out.
We actually started a new thing called Barbecue Chicken Alert, and we have named that after Najee Johnson. I mean, he was bad. I mean, it was really bad.
All game, man.
And I think it was one of those things that when Jalen Watson got hurt, I think people were just expecting, oh, next man up, next man up. And I get it. The Chiefs have done that. They do not have a replacement right now for losing Jalen Watson.
They don't. And, like, look, I know, there's always that, like, well, maybe he'll come back. I do not think he's coming back this year. Like, he had a serious injury. I would be very surprised if he plays again this season. I'm like, look, they can win and they can be fine if that cornerback spot is just a guy, just a run of the mill. Hey, he's fine. He's going to be here and there, but for the most part, like, you'll hang in there. And by the way, I think for them the answer is Williams. I think he's playing Joshua Williams. I get it. Look, he is zone. He struggles sometimes. He loses depth. He makes mistakes. But one thing about Joshua Williams, he can play man coverage. He's a big, athletic kid. And he's played good football in Kansas City before. And people may not remember, as a rookie, he was a huge reason why they won that AFC Championship game in 2022 against Cincinnati. Like, they have gotten real football out of Joshua Williams before. And I think, I get it, there's struggles. Then you go to him and you live with the fact that, there's going to be two or three plays a game where he drops way too far in zone. And there's going to be two or three plays a game where he might, get a penalty, a foul, that it's 50-50. It might go against him, may not. But he gives you a fighting chance on that side. Najee Johnson, all due respect to him, look, he's coming back off the ACL. He's a seventh-round pick. You are asking a ton of that kid to go in there and go against Amari Cooper and man call. Like, that's just not going to happen.
Right now, we're talking to Matt Verderam here for a couple more minutes, just going through some of the top storylines with the Kansas City Chiefs. You mentioned pass rush and that being an issue with the Kansas City Chiefs. It's funny that a team spent a first-round pick to potentially address this issue, and just he is a player that we never talk about. Like, I can't think of a Chiefs first-round pick in the last decade that has been able to just fly under the radar the way that Felix has been. You think about the scrutiny that Mecole Hardman got, the scrutiny that Sky Moore got, Kadarius Toney coming over via trade. We're talking about guys from day one. Hey, we expect you to help. And if you are not at the level, you face a certain measure of criticism. Felix has been able to just skate all of that for whatever reason. It doesn't add up to me.
I mean, the guys you mentioned, Hardman, Moore, they're late second round picks. And we didn't talk about Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who was a first round pick and was productive early on in his career. It wasn't great. He had 1,000 yards total as a rookie. It's a good point. I think part of it is they've just been winning Super Bowls. And it's like, all right, well, who cares? Train's leaving the station. Doesn't really matter. Well, right now it matters. Like, they need something. Now, again, maybe Uche coming in, playing a little bit more, Amenihu coming back, that really could fix it. Like, you could just have a world here where, down the stretch, it's Amenihu and Jones inside, with Wharton rotating in there. And it's Karlaftis and Uche outside with Dana rotating. And you're like, all right, they're fine. They're good. It could be one of those things where they have like a graphic on CBS in the divisional round. So like the last six games of the year, the Chiefs had more sacks than they had in their first 11. Like, that could happen. I think the cornerback thing is more dire. But yes, like with Felix, there was an understanding last year. Hey, look, he's a young first-round pick. It's kind of a redshirt year. He's behind a lot of guys. That's not the case this year. Like, he was supposed to at least be a contributor, and he's been nowhere to be found.
Matt, what do you think is worse, the Netflix stream or the Carolina Panthers?
Oh, my God. both are not good. I would, I got to say the Netflix stream because the Panthers have won two straight. But look, in that vein, if this is one of these games where the Chiefs screw around and it's like 2017 in the fourth quarter, people are going to justifiably go insane. It just has to be one of these games where the Chiefs just go, all right, listen, we're going to win 30-7, 30-10. But I don't know one person alive who thinks they're going to go in there and do that. Like, I fully expect this to be 24-13. And you never really think they're going to lose, but it's just, it's kind of frustrating. They leave a lot of questions. I feel like we're going to have another one of those games, Scott.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, that's the only games that they know how to play. Like, I 100% hear what you're saying. And man, I would love for this to be a comfortable 31-13. Like, we're the best team in the league. You guys are possibly the worst team in the league. We're just going to run away from you, and this is going to be a very boring second half. But the Chiefs haven't played that game since, what, the Miami postseason game?
Yeah, and it's funny you mention it because I was literally just going to say, they will do this all the way probably to the one seed, and then they'll play like Houston in the divisional round and just smoke them. Just come out, guns blazing, 30 plays you've never seen, 12 brand new red zone plays, self-scouted themselves, have like 8 sacks against that offensive line. And you'll sit there and go, what, like, where was that all year? But I do, look, I do think sometimes the human element's forgotten a little bit with this, and I'm not giving the Chiefs any kind of a pass. I do think there is an element of boredom with this team. It's just like that Bills game for the Bills, and the Bills are a damn good football team. That is a Super Bowl for them. It is a Super Bowl. The Chiefs don't care. Like, they want to win. They care that they win. Like, they care they play well. But, like, they don't – you can't manufacture that level of urgency every week. And I wonder if internally, if there's a little part of them that's like, you know what, 115 in a row, not all that upset. We don't have to worry about going undefeated the whole rest of the year. I mean, certainly they would all have to have won the game. But I wonder if there's a little part of them on the inside. So, you know what, it's not the worst thing that's ever happened either.
You know what, Matt? I'm starting to come around on Pittsburgh. Maybe I'm crazy for doing that, but I'm starting to come around on Pittsburgh. Is that's just going to be a very difficult team to remove from the postseason. I understand why people like Kansas City and Buffalo and Baltimore because of the quarterback position, but I think Russell's a lot better than he gets credit for, and I think all of our Russell feelings are based more around Nathaniel Hackett than they are about Russell Wilson. When he got away from him, he's been pretty capable, I would say. That's a team that can run the football, a team that's got a good defense, and a team that you know is going to be well-coached and really difficult to beat. Pittsburgh's not being talked about enough in the conversation of a team that could actually make some noise in January.
I am very torn on Pittsburgh. Like, on one hand, everything you said is fair. On the other hand, did you see the interception he threw in the end zone against Baltimore?
I did.
It's one of the worst interceptions I've ever seen. Like, literally the second he released the ball, I was like, oh my God, he's getting intercepted. Like, you just knew the second that ball left his hand, you're like, there's 5 Ravens there. This is getting picked. Now, that being said, they are interesting in this way to me. They have a great pass rush. And when you're playing against Mahomes and Allen and Lamar and Stroud and Herbert and on the AFC playoffs, that's how they're going to have to win. They're going to have to win by causing turnovers, being a problem, getting those short fields. And that's how they beat the Ravens. They didn't score a touchdown. They won the game because they forced 2 turnovers on the plus side of the field, and one of them was inside like the 15-yard line. They didn't beat themselves outside of that hideous throw with turnovers. They have not given up. Do you know they have not given up a point this year off turnovers? Like, they are going to constrict you, and you have to play a clean game. Like, when Kansas City plays them on Christmas, if you said to me the Chiefs don't turn the ball over, Chiefs win the game. It may not be pretty. They might win 20-14, but they'll win. But if they go in there and they turn the ball over twice, you're going to lose to them. Like, that's the way Pittsburgh plays, and I think the Chargers are similar to them. Like, those teams are not explosive. They don't have good offenses, but they know their identity. They're really well coached, and those teams can be dangerous. You get a little loose with the ball in the playoffs.
The team you just described, and I'm not saying they are that team, but who you just described is the Giants back in 2007. Nobody thought the Giants had the best quarterback in the league, but they could run the ball a little bit. They had a great pass rush, and that covered up a lot of the other warts on the team. And a team like Kansas City that doesn't run away from teams, always likes to keep it close, those are the kind of teams that eventually get you. That's what got the Patriots.
No, you know what? It's a fair comp. And, you know, I think that's, to me, the AFC playoffs. I think we pretty much know six of the teams, and then it's like Denver's probably going to get in, although I guess you could sit there and say, well, the Colts could do it, or maybe, you know, still believe in the Bengals. I'm out at this point. But you know the other six teams. Barring disaster, you're going to get Kansas City, Buffalo, Baltimore, Pittsburgh, Houston, L.A. And I'll tell you, it's a fascinating group of teams. My personal opinion, even despite what happened on Sunday, I still think the Chiefs are the favorite in the AFC. Until, I don't care. Week 11, that's great. Congratulations to the Bills. The Chiefs have beaten them every time it's ever mattered. I think the Bills are clearly their biggest competition. And then after that, you start looking at these teams that have, like, really big strengths but massive warts. Pittsburgh has a great pass rush, but their offense is a huge question mark. Houston, great quarterback, pretty good defense. It's an atrocious offensive line. Like an offensive line that could just get them sent home by themselves. The Chargers, no weapons whatsoever, but really well coached, good identity. Pittsburgh, we just talked about them. Great defense, great passers, all that stuff. You wonder, and then Baltimore, of course, look, you got Lamar and Derrick Henry, but they can't stop a nosebleed. So which of those teams in the next 7 weeks are going to close some of those holes up? Not even completely, but just shrink them to where you go, okay, it's not good, but you could survive it. Kind of like Kansas City's issues, like we talked about. Buffalo's got their own issues against the run, things like that. That's my question. Which one of those teams below Kansas City and Buffalo kind of cleans up the nonsense, and which one of them doesn't? Because whoever doesn't, I think, is going to get sent home early.
Last couple questions here. I've got two hypothetical questions for you. If you could bring back one of these two players, who do you think helps them more? Is it Orlando Brown or L'Jarius Sneed?
Sneed. If they had L'Jarius Sneed on this team playing like he played last year, I think they'd win the Super Bowl. I just don't think that teams would score. You could argue Brown for sure. If you said Eric Fisher, I'd probably take Eric Fisher. But I would take Sneed.
Last one here. If you could go back, would you still draft Xavier Worthy for Kansas City, or would you draft Leggett, who went to Carolina, or would you draft Ladd McConkey, who went to Los Angeles?
I take Worthy. I really would. I think they're inches away from him having about 550 yards and 9 touchdowns. So I still think that kid, he's getting open. Like, he's got to learn how to use his feet when he's on the boundary. But he gets open. He doesn't drop the ball. I think Xavier Worthy actually could have a very good career. But, you know, they've got to hit. They got to hit on some of these. He's a real high ceiling guy. But he's a low floor guy if you don't hit those deep balls. But I would still take him. I think he's got the highest ceiling of those three guys.
I will say this about Ladd McConkey. Everything that scouts thought he was going to be, that's exactly who he is now for the Chargers.
Yep. No, he is. He is. I just wrote about him in we had a piece about rookies, and I wrote about McConkey. Like, he's one of those guys, again, like, ceiling-wise, is he ever going to make a Pro Bowl? I don't know. Maybe. But, like, I don't know if he's that guy. But he, if they need 3rd and 7, I know where they're throwing the football. Like, it's going to him. And so, you know, he is he's their best weapon right now, and he's been their most consistent, and certainly he's a guy in a playoff game that you're going to have to circle and pay attention to.
That is my guy, Matt Verderama, Sports Illustrated, joining us on the show. Matt, great stuff, man. I appreciate you.
Anytime, Carrington. Take care.
Absolutely. That's Matt Verderama joining us on the show. Really good stuff for him today. I'll ask you guys that question, 913-586-7965. If you could bring back Orlando Brown to play left tackle, or you could bring back L'Jarius Sneed, which one would you bring back? We'll give you our answer next. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
This man was a bona fide scrub.
On 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
All right, I got a hypothetical question to ask you guys. I would say the Chiefs right now have a couple of weaknesses. One is at left tackle. The other one is at corner. The Chiefs, I would say, two major departures they've had over the last couple of years has been at left tackle and corner. One was Orlando Brown. You guys know he went to go play for the Ops, went to go play for the Cincinnati Bengals. No sense of loyalty in that, man. The other one, last year, they traded L'Jarius Sneed. They traded him to the Tennessee Titans, where careers go to die. That's where careers go. If you could bring one of them back, 913-586-7965, you could bring back Sneed or Orlando Brown. Which one of them would you bring back? I am a little bit surprised that right now the text line is pretty overwhelming with, I want to bring Sneed back. I am a little bit surprised for this. There's a lot of "in spags we trust," I would say, kind of motto. And the belief has usually been that Spags can go just make another one, right? The same way that he made Charvarius Ward, and then Charvarius Ward turned into L'Jarius Sneed. Maybe the expectation that was Jalen Watson was going to be that individual. And Jalen Watson had gotten off to a really, really strong start. If you were asking me right now, what is the Chiefs' biggest weakness? And now I feel good that I can go back to being cornerback, because that's really who I am. Deep down in my heart of hearts, you know who I am? I'm Chargers dot and corner dot. I try to be all these other things, but I can't fight who I am anymore. The Chargers are good, and the Chiefs got problems at corner. You want to know how I know they got problems at corner? Because of this.
Barbecue chicken alert. Barbecue chicken alert.
I saw Nazi Johnson playing on Monday. And anytime you're getting beat by Mac Hollins and Curtis Samuel, and you're out there and you're getting filleted the way that he was, there's a problem going on. Rob, which one would you bring back? You can bring back one of these two individuals. You can bring back Orlando Brown. You can bring back L'Jarius Sneed. I'm not talking about contract, none of that. I'm just saying is you can bring one of these two players back to help you for the rest of the season and, in theory, shore up one of those two spots. Who would you pick?
Orlando Brown Jr. And it's really not that without hesitation. First and foremost, before I really answer the question, the revisionist history game Chiefs fans play with Orlando Brown Jr. is very amusing to me. When the Chiefs traded for Orlando Brown Jr., it was, oh, we got Willie Rofe. Watch out.
Nobody was saying that. Cut the nonsense.
And then he turned down that contract. Everyone and their grandmother said, listen, that contract offer was fake. It was just the Chiefs playing the media game. And from that moment on, Orlando Brown Jr. became public enemy number one, and I don't get why. This team has the ingredients on offense to still be sensational despite all the injuries, despite Hollywood Brown being out, despite Rashee Rice being out, Pacheco being gone for all that time. The offense is still right on the cusp of being special, and they're starting to get healthy again. You know what the hangup is? Mahomes is getting pressured all the time. Sean Syed was on the show earlier today, and he said it's the least escapability Mahomes has had in the pocket in his career, which is an advanced analytics stat. We don't have to delve into what it means. Long story short, pressure is beating the Chiefs' offense. If I can fix the giant hole they have in their offensive line with an established pro, not a project like Wanya Morris, and not a super-duper project like Kingsley Suamataia, if I get an established, solid pro in right there, the Chiefs' offense starts looking like the Chiefs' offense again. And you're not chewing on your fingernails for 17-13 or 16-13 wins. The Chiefs might, heaven forbid, score 30 again. Wouldn't that be fun? That is why I would go Orlando Brown Jr. And I feel like Chiefs fans have always been scared to admit this. L'Jarius Sneed is an injury risk, period, end of discussion. You know why the Chiefs didn't re-sign him long-term? Because he had injury issues. This show reported that. You know what he's been doing in Tennessee? Battling injury issues and playing mediocre football. The idea is great. I saw both together. He and McDuffie was awesome. But Spags and Veach and Co. can figure it out. Matt Verderam just said more Josh Williams. Cool. I think that's a fine solution. There is no in-house solution at left tackle. It's why the Donovan Smith thing keeps coming up. Orlando Brown Jr. is the answer.
I think there is a possibility. I think there's a possibility that Kingsley's their biggest miss. I think there's a chance. I was talking to Cody about this. Maybe they talked about this on the show. Maybe they didn't. So I just want to preface it with that. Kingsley has played in three games, and they already have him as a healthy scratch. In what world, Rob, do you see Kingsley as their starting left tackle next year at week one? Is there a scenario in which you see that being the case? Because
low.
This team will probably, if I had to guess, they're probably going to have to spend a little bit of money the same way that they did at right tackle to go shore things up with Juwan Taylor. They're probably going to have to spend a little bit of money to do that same thing over at left tackle. Now, that doesn't mean that you're going to go out and break the bank, but the Chiefs kind of went the one-year stopgap with Donovan Smith. I would say that it worked. You tried to draft a couple of other players, but next year, you're either going to have to fully trust Wanye to do the job, or you're going to have to go out and spend some big-time money to fix it. You determined pretty early on in Kingsley's career, nah, man, he's not the answer. I mean, three games, you've determined this was the answer, and now he is a healthy DMP. They don't trust him anymore. Last week, we were talking about the Burns family circle of trust. They just told you who's no longer in the circle of trust. Xavier Worthy's still there. He's still inside the circle of trust. He might not be in Rob's circle of trust, but he is very much inside the Chiefs' circle of trust. They voted somebody off the island last week. They voted Kingsley off the island. So as we go forward, what does that mean for this team? What does that mean for their roster building and how they go about and do things? I think the answer is Orlando Brown, too, if I had to pick. I think it just makes more sense. You give more protection and support for Patrick Mahomes. I think just with the amount of bodies that they have, I think they can figure it out at corner. Now, I don't know if they're going to be able to figure it out with Nazi Johnson, but I would try to give more of those opportunities to Joshua Williams between now and the end of the season and hope that Joshua Williams can kind of grow into what it was. We didn't talk about this nearly enough what had happened, but I would say of all the injured players that the Chiefs have had, the one they missed the most is Jalen Watson. They miss Jalen Watson more than they miss Rashee Rice. They miss Jalen Watson more than they miss Isaiah Pacheco. They've been able to manage it with those other players. I think it's going to be really tough for them to continue to manage it without Watson. I think Watson gave you a lot of run support. I think he was really good in blitz packages. I also think that he can cover. And maybe it was just a bad game, and we got to continue to give him more time, more rope. He did miss all of last season, meaning Nazi Johnson. So maybe it's just a little bit more opportunities, and he'll be fine. But in the biggest game of the Chiefs season, he gave up 9 catches for 103 yards and 1 touchdown and had a passer rating of 128.1 against him. Now, maybe this gets fixed with more pass rush. You get Charles Omenihu back. Spags dials up some blitzes, and this team's going to get after the quarterback better, which inevitably is going to help the back half of that defense and going to be able to help the secondary. But if you're telling me out of those two options, I think I would pick the left tackle. I think that adds at least a better immediate support, and I think they'll be able to kind of manage the cornerback situation, certainly when they get the pass rush back. We can take you guys' phone calls on this, 913-586-7965. If you could bring one of the two players back, if you could bring back Orlando Brown or L'Jarius Sneed, which one would you pick? We'll also talk about today. Today is the 20-year anniversary of one of the wildest things we've ever seen in sports. Keep it right here, Sir Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan. Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
There are some moments in life that you remember exactly where you were whenever they happened, you know? I remember where I was whenever I found out that Michael Jackson had passed. I remember where I was when we got the news about Kobe Bryant. Rest in peace. There are certain moments in your life. There are certain games that you remember exactly where you were, who you were watching them with, what you were doing, and they kind of stick with you. There are certain things that you just can't believe that you were watching. Rob, I was in high school, and it was a Friday ESPN game. You know they always have that game that kind of tips off around 7 that leads into the late night sports center. You know the one I'm talking about. And it was a big Eastern Conference showdown between the Pistons and the Pacers. You know, those are two good teams at the time. The Pacers had Jermaine O'Neal. Reggie Miller was near the end of his career. Ron Artest. The Pistons had just come off, you know, winning the NBA championship against the Lakers. These were two really good teams playing a little Friday, November, early season NBA game. There's only one reason why we talk about this game. It's not because they were two good teams going up against each other. It's because a fight broke out. Yes, 20 years ago today, Malice at the Palace. Rob, have we had anything else in sports? Then I understand that this is different. If I say, all right, in the last 20 years, Has there been a you remember exactly where you were moment in sports? What would you say is next on the list? Because that's number one and it's not close. What would you say is number two?
I
know the Chiefs have had some great Super Bowl memories. No one in Philadelphia is going back like, man, you know what, man, that drive that he had last year against the Niners, that does not have the same effect on people. What do you think the answer is?
I actually think the Mouse of the Palace is two. Do you know what I think number one is? DeMar Hamlin.
It's a good one.
Like,
well, that's a good one.
DeMar Hamlin, now, it had the advantage of social media. Like, that's not the Mouse of the Palace had. But you remember how social media and the sports world at large reacted when DeMar Hamlin happened. They stopped a football game. They made up and changed NFL rules basically on the spot.
No, that's a good one.
Because of DeMar Hamlin. I think Mouse of the Palace is two because I think DeMar Hamlin is actually number one.
Yeah, the thing that first came to my mind, and you have a way better answer than I have, was the kick six against Auburn in Alabama. That's just one of those plays that you were sitting there watching like, wait, what? They're about to win? How? But no, the DeMar Hamlin one, that's a really good one. That's the best answer in the last 20 years of the you remember exactly where you were moment. I thought he died. I know I wasn't the only one. I thought we watched a man die there on the football field.
I mean, it was like it happened in slow motion. The situation and then like the gravity of it hit Aikman and hit Buck in the booth. And then it just was this bone-chilling quiet in Cincinnati, followed by commercial after commercial after commercial, because ESPN just wouldn't come back because of what was happening. That is undeniably the most I know exactly where I was moment in sports in the last 20 years. It's a very sad moment, so it's not in the same vein of like some of the text line says Tigers Masters win. If you're looking for more that lane, I can think of one, but that moment stopped.
This is a really good one from the text line. Someone said Will Smith slap at the Oscars is absolutely on that list. You remember the first time you found out that Will Smith had smacked Chris Rock? I wasn't even watching it live. I think I was like watching a movie or something. And next thing I remember, my phone, it just had an unusual amount of text afterwards. I'm like, wait, why? Why did I have so many of these? Like, oh, you see what happened with Will Smith? And I was thinking, oh, he won, you know, best actor or whatever for King Richard. No, he like, no, hold on, you're making this up. And then I saw the video for myself. I was like, oh boy. No, you guys didn't undersell it. In fact, the video was actually better than what people had told me what had happened. That's a really good one. That is one of those. You'll never forget the first time you saw the Will Smith slap against Chris Rock. That's a good one. You guys beat me this time. You had a better answer than I did. Text line did too. That's good. Let's go to the phone lines. 913-586-7965. Neil in Lone Jack. Neil, how you doing, my man?
Good. T-Dot, how are you?
Doing good, man.
First and foremost, I'd like to say, Roy, why do we not have a postseason show this year?
I don't know.
That's a weird. I really would like to get that back as soon as possible. Second of all, I was calling about the Legarius versus O'Brown, and as usual, my answer is not short, so that's why I didn't text it in. Basically, my answer is it depends on the context and what the question is asked. If we're getting back Legarius Sneed, how he played when he was here, Orlando Brown, how he played when he was here, I'm taking Sneed all day. Brown was okay. He was good enough. Had a chip. But it was incredible.
Neil, I'm with you. Your phone's kind of cutting up a little bit. We got your answer, man. I appreciate it. Neil's phone wasn't 100% there. I mean, that was the answer on the text line. A lot of people were taking Legarius Sneed, and it certainly makes sense. 913-586-7965. You could bring back one of them. You could bring back Orlando Brown or Legarius Sneed. Which one would you pick? I want to play this audio for you guys very quickly. This was Shannon Sharp on First Take. He actually thinks Pittsburgh's the best team in the AFC.
I'm not so sure the best team in the AFC right now isn't the Pittsburgh Steelers. They're well coached. They don't beat themselves. Rush through a terrible interception in the end zone. But if you make me pick right now, you just said, who are the Bills the best? I'm going to say no. But if you make me pick of the four teams, the 3-4 teams that which are the best, I'm going to go the black and gold, and I'm going to say the Pittsburgh Steelers.
I am not saying that this team is this other team. It's not what I'm saying. I don't think they're winning the Super Bowl. But there's something special about this Pittsburgh Steelers team. Maybe it is an overreaction to me for me doubting them so much in the offseason, and I'm overcorrecting on the other side, and I can acknowledge that. But this Pittsburgh team has a lot of 2007 New York Giants vibes to me. A lot of them. Eli Manning was not the best quarterback in the league, but they had just enough quarterback play. They could get after the other team's quarterback. They could play just enough defense, and they could hang around and keep it close. That was not the best team in the NFL in 2007, and somehow they won the Super Bowl. I think that Pittsburgh is a much bigger contender than we all have given credit. Kansas City is good. Buffalo is good. Baltimore is good. But Pittsburgh has a way of forcing you to play their style. You're not scoring 31 points against the Steelers team. So if they're going to keep every team playing in the low 20s, that gives them an opportunity to win. If you let TJ Watt wreck the game for you, he can do it. The biggest change that I've had throughout the course of the season is Pittsburgh. I think Pittsburgh deserves to be in your Super Bowl conversations. And if you were going to make a six teams you trust most or six teams that can do it, I don't think you can make that list without including Pittsburgh. We'll talk more about them coming up at the top of the hour. We'll talk about the race for the one seed, that now it's a legitimate race. Kansas City is still leading that race, certainly, but Buffalo is right there behind you, a game behind. Pittsburgh is a game behind you, and Pittsburgh still has a game coming up against the Kansas City Chiefs. So things could certainly continue to shift as we head into the final 7-8 weeks of the NFL season. Keep it right here. It's the Drive.